I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. Unusual for today is I decided to do a Zoom presentation. You can't see it live, but it will be posted on YouTube, and so you can go up later today and watch the program in its entirety. And I'm doing this because I now have a Zoom here in my office. As you can see from the backdrop, this is my office at the animal sanctuary where I live. I take care of a lot of animals, find them homes for life. And this is where I do my research. This pile behind me is just the next 2 days' reading material. And take the calls and prepare the shows and the special investigative reports. So I thought maybe somebody might like to see the environment down here. I've had a lot of questions raised about what should we do if you live in a state, and the first state's going to be New York State, where the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, will be mandated. And also, they'll probably mandate everyone be tested right now, unless you live in New Jersey, Connecticut, and I believe they're also allowing those principal states, but no other states, except bordering states. When you want to visit New York, you have to have a COVID-19 antibody test and show that you're negative. Then when you arrive in the city, you must self-quarantine for 3 days. On the fourth day, according to this executive order from the governor, you have to retest and test negative again. If you do, then you're able to go out and enjoy the city for whatever reason you came. But if not, you have to re-quarantine for another 14 days. Well, there's a simple practical issue here. How many people are going to want to come to New York City if they have to stay in quarantine for 18 days? That's not practical. Well, what about the people that commute to New York on a regular basis, but not in one of the bordering states, like New Jersey, Connecticut, right? Then you've got problems. So that's one issue. Secondly, is the antibody test itself is recognized all over the world as being not a gold standard test. It was never meant to determine that you have a viral load, meaning how many viruses do you have to actually be sick. It doesn't tell you that. Or distinguishing a new from an old COVID virus. You could add a COVID virus from a cold and test positive. That doesn't mean you're sick or going to be sick or going to spread the illness. In fact, it's a very contagious, easily spread virus. What they'll show is the headlines in the New York Post, 17 people in a wedding ceremony are now COVID positive. That's not what's important. What's important is how many of those people are sick and how many of those people are spreading the virus. What is their viral load? How many of them are needing hospitalization? How many died? Then you start realizing that's a completely different set of numbers. It would be no different than every single day for at least 6 months a year, from the fall to the spring, people go to school with different viruses. They have them in their throat, in their sinus passages. Some people have gotten the flu vaccine, especially the nasal flu vaccine. They're actually actively spreading the virus, the flu virus, because it's alive. And that means every time they blow their nose or sneeze or touch their nose and touch desks, anything, doors, they're spreading it for about a week to 2 weeks. When they go home, they're spreading it. We never tell people when you get the flu virus which virus you're getting, how you're getting it, and how easy it is to spread. So let's just say if you're an average school teacher, and we have a lot of school teachers listening to this program, so you're concerned, so you take proper precautions. Not because of COVID, prior to COVID. You take your vitamin C, you have a fresh juice in the morning, maybe a grapefruit or an orange juice, or maybe some lemon, ginger juice. You take vitamin D and selenium and zinc. All of those are known and proven by thousands of studies to strengthen your natural immune system. So you know that A, you're not going to be spreading viruses from you to your students, but more importantly, you're one teacher, and generally distance more than 6 to 10 feet away from the students. But the students are crowded, and they're going to be bringing viruses bacteria, parasites into that class. But when someone gets sick, it might be a mild sickness or a serious sickness, and some will die from that. You don't close down the schools. You, if you're smart, between each class, you simply take hydrogen peroxide or alcohol and you spray all the desks and the chairs and all the doorknobs, everything anyone would touch. And then you advocate, though you can't do more than advocate, to build up their immune system as best as possible. So that's the reality of what we've been living with up to this point. And that's realistic. Now, some believe that we'll develop a herd immunity. I'm not one of those people. I've not seen the science to support that. If it exists, I'd be happy to review it. But I've done several studies and written articles on the herd immunity. And we've seen people where there's 97% immunization, and yet the same people coming down with the very virus they were immunized from. So that means there's substantial gaps in that. Now, there might be partial immunity, but I believe the best thing we can do is just immunize ourselves to the natural way that life is by exposing ourselves in as far as going into the country, going into fields and enjoying nature. You're getting danders and pollens and molds into your body. I have barns here. I have animals here. Early in the morning, I'm in those barns cleaning them up. Now, if you were to look in the air, you would see billions of tiny little particulate matter. You won't necessarily see it unless you're doing some heavy sweeping around hay, but normally you see it. And when the light shines through, just like a window in the city, suddenly the light shines in the prism of the glass, gives a reflection and amplification of what's in the air. And you think, wow, all that dust is there. You have a shag carpet. That's just a breeding ground for different types of creatures and microorganisms. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be getting sick. But if you have a weakened immune system, if you have a compromised system because of autoimmune conditions, like arthritis, for example, or heart disease, you're far more susceptible. So by being able to live in the real world, by being able to interrelate with people, by being able to be conscious of what it is to have a healthy diet and a healthy lifestyle, we lessen the opportunity for these opportunistic invasions into our body to manifest into full-fledged disease. So why don't we have a Surgeon General or the head of the U.S. Public Health Service that oversees all of our health agencies, the National Cancer Institute, National Institutes of Aging, National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the CDC, the FDA. Why doesn't every one of those top leaders have a national program for two things? One, preventing disease, which we have not done at all, zero. And two, to help identify those people who are most susceptible of being sick or dying from any form of viral infection, not just COVID, but including COVID. Because all the research shows that those most likely to die are those with multiple comorbidities, emphysema, heart disease, cancer, etc. We haven't done a single thing to help those people. To the contrary, we have caused many doctors not to see patients for about 4 months. As a result, people were living with substantial disease conditions and dying because they weren't getting the necessary medical attention that they could have and should have had, which could have kept them alive. Instead, we put people in nursing homes, and they're there to die. Hospice, they die faster than anywhere else. Cancer clinics, they die. And assisted living centers, and they die. And these are the weakest, frailest amongst our entire society. We should have a Marshall Plan to get the state-of-the-art therapies like hyperbaric oxygen therapies, ozone therapies, intravenous vitamin therapies, juicing therapies, dietetic therapies, with plant-based diets, air purification systems in every room, so that a person is living in a healthy environment, improving their illness condition. We're not doing any of that. But trillions of dollars are being made where doctors, one doctor in Connecticut was charging $1,950-some to take a simple, inexpensive corona test, and then charging almost $455 for a 4-minute follow-up call. Oh yeah, you're negative. Oh yeah, you're positive. And charging them $450. That leads to the next part of my issue. I've given you a list of the things that will not be done with this or any other administration because they haven't been done for the last 45 years. Nothing. Nothing that fundamentally improves the quality of a person's life, including their environment, bringing jobs back into their cities where it has been gutted and ghettoized, where crime is prolific, where the victims are poor people living in those communities, and yet not a single thing has been done to help those people. Every administration, with the full support of Congress, bipartisan support, offshores jobs, because those companies that are offshoring are the biggest campaign donors. Pharmaceutical drugs, outrageously overpriced, and yet we, the people, are not given the advantage of having a drug at a 100% markup. 100%, that's a good markup. I'd love to get 100% markup selling food. You don't. 30 to 50% in most cases. But you give them 100% to the pharmaceutical companies. That means you're going to save thousands of percent in gouged profit for a drug that may or may not be beneficial. But we're not even examining if the drugs that people are given properly, and the study shows they're not. We're over-medicated. And even the drugs given properly, there could be more effective and less toxic treatments. We're not dealing with that at all. And as a result, killing far more people in the United States, 400% more people in the United States in a given year and a half, are iatrogenesis or medically induced damage. Well, how many people are going to become statistics, either with injuries or death, from the vaccines, experimental vaccines, never before done, bypassing all standards of safety, no animal testing. And then, of course, the head of Pfizer cashes out $5.2 or $5.3 million on the day he announces, oh, we have a 90% efficacy rate. Based upon what? Has anyone come forward, Anthony Fauci or anyone else, and said, yes, there's an efficacy rate, however, there is also a lot of problems because this vaccine does not keep you out of the hospital. It's not intended to. It's not intended to stop serious COVID infections or infecting other people. It doesn't do that. It wasn't tested for that. We think, why should I take it? Well, because it'll lessen some of the minor problems like a fever or cold. Well, why can't I deal with those in less invasive ways? You could, and they know that, but that's not where the profit is. So our show today is devoted to sharing with you what we believe is the truth about Anthony Fauci, the entire COVID scandal, the manipulation of statistics, which I've been laying out every single day, how they'll take a person that tests positive, but is completely healthy. They had a virus cold 2 years ago. Their body is not able to transmit it to anyone, and suddenly the doctor says, you're positive. Hence the New York Times, which knows better, should state, here are the people who tested positive because we're testing a lot more people now. And when you test more people with a faulty test that tends to go false positive, meaning you don't have the virus, but it shows you do, and then they're not saying that's different than people who tested positive who are now sick in hospital. Ah, they don't make that distinction. They conflated, brought the issues together. That's deception. In my personal opinion, it's deception by intent to game you because we keep a country so fearful of each other, fearful that we social distance, fearful that we wear masks, that viruses go right through. I still suggest you wear a mask, but for different reasons, not because it's going to prevent the spread of COVID. It won't. That's a matter of scientific fact. They cannot show a single study that the COVID virus itself is blocked from going into a mask. Now, there are reasons to wear masks, and that's why I support it. Wear one myself, but not because of COVID, for other reasons, other bacteria, other droplets, large droplets when a person sneezes or coughs or is yelling that hang in the air. That's why I sterilize surface areas and take paper towels to open doorknobs, and wash when I've been on a plane, go home and take a shower. Yeah, there's good reasons for good hygiene. And yet we've been misled at every turn. We've been lied to constantly, and I believe it's time it stops. And we can only stop when we know the truth. You're about to hear Robert Kennedy Jr. interviewing an individual, David E. Martin. He is a professor. He's a multidisciplinary person, extraordinarily interesting Renaissance person. And he has the truth. What you're about to hear, or watch, if you go to prn.fm and scroll down on the left-hand side, you'll watch this. You're about to see facts and hear information you have not heard before. This is the first of six programs we're going to be doing, sharing different insights with different people in different areas of this condition that we're suffering from. Propagandized, weaponized COVID hysteria. Is it a real disease? Yes. Can it kill you? It has. But not everyone. Therefore, we're not doing what we should to protect those who are vulnerable, and we're overprotecting people who are committing suicide, taking drugs, going bankrupt, destroying their life. For that, these people, Anthony Fauci, Donald Trump, and everyone else, Joe Biden, they all should be held accountable, not just at the ballot in time, but all the people in the media. And I would walk away from the media. Walk away. Don't read another New York Times. Don't turn on the television for any of these shows, because they are not representing the truth and being honest and objective with you. That's my personal feeling. Now, to one of the most unique interviews and the most honest interviews you will ever see on what's really behind all of this.
Here at the University of Virginia, I ran that for the decade of the 90s. In 1998, I set up a company which allowed U.S. banks and then global banks to use intangible assets as collateral for loans. It was bringing the knowledge economy into banking. And so for the last 22 years, we started that in October of 1998, and MCAM has been around ever since. We are the only underwriter of intangible assets for banks worldwide. So our work is done in 168 countries.
So just that people understand that normally when you want to get a loan from the bank, you put up security, and that could be your business or your house, and you figured out a way to allow people to put up patented ideas or copyright.
That's exactly right. Yeah, so if you think about the average small business, Bobby, the average small business doesn't have an enormous amount of tangible collateral. They don't have a building. They don't have production lines. You know, if it's a real venture capital startup, you know, they don't have a lot of personal finances. They're getting friends and family and fool money that's coming in through the VC pipeline. So what that means is that entrepreneurship was always hit with very high cost capital. You had to go to venture capital. You had to go to non-traditional capital sources. And so our company was a mechanism to drop the cost of capital to make entrepreneurship available to much, much more of America. So in 1998, when we started, we doubled the lending capacity to small business in the United States in the first year of our operations.
And tell me how that relates to the Moderna vaccine, which is
perfect.
Which is, by the way, looking more and more like a giant Ponzi scheme.
Yes. So what we had to do, Bobby, is
let me just explain to people who don't know what Moderna is. Moderna is the number one of all the 210 vaccines that are now part of Warp Speed program, or trying to get into the Warp Speed program. The number one in the line is the Moderna vaccine. And the reason is it's become a kind of a vanity project for Tony Fauci. And he controls the committees and the panels. He picked the members of the panels that choose which one of these vaccines is going to go first. And then he gave a series of what I guess could politely be called concessions to Moderna that the other vaccine companies were not getting. For example, you can skip animal testing and go straight to human testing. This was a particular concern, of course, because, as David's going to explain, Moderna is using a technology that has never been used in any medicine before, and it's a technology that is controversial, and nobody knows whether it's going to have a bad downside. It's a technology, and tell me if I get this right, that uses messenger RNA to infiltrate the human cell, and then with a protein or a chain of amino acids to stimulate that cell to start producing antibodies to a particular antigen or disease. And the way that the promoters of mRNA theoretically promote it is by saying that, as Bill Gates said, who is one of the funders of Moderna, that it will turn the human cell into a vaccine manufacturing factory. And right. So tell me if I got that right and continue.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's answer the beginning question. What we had to do for our business is we actually have to monitor every patent that issues anywhere on Earth. So the fact of the matter is, our business has to look at whether or not people say they have what they said they have. So let's take Moderna as an example. In August of 2010, when Moderna filed its first patent, to your point, their goal was to turn the human cell into its own pharmaceutical company. The idea was, if you put mRNA into a particular delivery agent, and the agent that they talked about was a lipid, you could get that mRNA to go into the cell to alter the way in which the cell works. So one of a couple things can happen. The cell itself could manufacture proteins or protein fragments inside of itself to achieve certain outcomes. And if we go back and look at what Moderna's primary thrust was when it started, Bobby, it was actually a cancer treatment, not a vaccine. This started off as a way to treat and potentially work on targeting cancer cells. And it was only after a series of very, very noteworthy false starts, where they tried to get stuff done that didn't work, that suddenly people said, well, hold on a minute, couldn't we essentially turn cells into their own vaccine producing kind of regimens? But all of the theory is that if you introduce these fragments of mRNA, you can get a protein expression or a fraction of a protein expression that is going to do something to the cell to either promote a new action by the cell. That could be blocking the cell from receiving certain antigens coming in. It could be actually producing a series of proteins which would combat an infective agent. And in the case of cancer, which is where they started their primary focus, it was about altering the way in which cells proliferated, because they thought maybe they could actually build essentially an oncology treatment where the cell itself becomes the producer of the thing that could blow up cancer. So that's what they did. But here's the problem. The problem is the core technology that they built this on came out of a National Science Foundation, not an NIH. It started at National Science Foundation grant. The core technology that was represented in what started Moderna was published in August of 2009, 1 year before Moderna filed its first patent. And one of the most important things to understand about this company is it was founded by one individual appropriating technology that US taxpayers paid for through the National Science Foundation, and deciding to individually and personally profit from that by essentially expropriating information from the work that was paid for with the National Science Foundation grant, wrapping it up in a company where he would become one of the co-founders. Interestingly enough, illegally naming the two venture capitalists as co-inventors. They had nothing to do with the invention, but he named them as co-inventors. And the company got off to the races in 2010, in the late summer of 2010, as a company founded on misappropriated technology, appropriated for the purpose of personal enrichment. And as you've seen, over the now 140 patents and patent applications that Moderna has prosecuted, not once have they followed the law and identified the fact that they are in fact beholden to federal government grants for all of the things that they develop. They're violating the Bayh-Dole Act, the 1980 Bayh-Dole Act, in every single one of their patent filings. This company has been operating as an illegal operation from the beginning. And it's not surprising that their apologist in chief, their advocate in chief, is none other than Tony Fauci, who has every bit of an interest in seeing their vaccine jump to the front of the line, because NIAID has its vested interest in seeing it succeed.
Right. And Tony Fauci has put in 2.48 billion US taxpayer dollars into this venture.
At least. What we know is that he has put several appropriated and non-competing grants. And most of your viewers don't understand the difference between a competitive grant, which is a researcher who has to file a grant application. They're up against all kinds of other grant applications. They're competing for funds. Moderna has received non-competing funds, meaning they don't have to prove anything. They don't have to do anything. They don't even have to tell you really what the money is going to be used for. It's like getting blank check authorizations. And we know that since 2005, roughly $1.7 billion a year, $1.7 billion a year, has gone through the DARPA-funded bioweapon and biopreparedness program through NIAID. NIAID is the administrator of that $1.7 billion a year. And much of that has gone into a variety of programs that ultimately landed at Moderna.
So let me give people kind of a little bit of a background on Tony Fauci. Tony Fauci came to out of his internship. Since his internship ended in 1968, he's never treated a patient. He's a doctor, but he's a doctor who doesn't see patients. He went directly to NIAID. He then became the head of NIAID in 1984, at the very time that the HIV epidemic exploded. And what Tony Fauci does, NIAID is supposed to look for the causes and also treatments for infectious diseases, for allergic diseases, and autoimmune diseases. Tony Fauci does almost none of those things. What he's done is he's taken an enormous budget that began with the AIDS budget, which is now about $6 billion a year, plus another $1.7 billion a year that he gets from the Defense Department, which becomes part of his discretionary spending. And he invests that money in developing new drugs. And he farms the money out to about 1,300 principal investigators who run their own little empires at Harvard, at NYU, at Berkeley, at MIT. And they begin the drug development for him. They do the clinical studies. And then when it gets to a certain point, he sells the drug or transfers it to one of the big pharmaceutical companies. But he does a deal with them where he splits the royalties for many of these drugs. So he has now, David mentioned the Bayh-Dole Act. The Bayh-Dole Act, I believe, was passed in 84, but you may be right. It may have been passed a little earlier than that.
Yeah, it was debated in 1979, signed into law in 1980.
All right. And what that act did was it said for the first time, it said it used to be that if the government developed a new technology or a new drug, it became part of the public domain, and anybody could use it, that there was no patent for it, and you couldn't patent it. The Bayh-Dole Act changed that, and it was a good intention. It was saying, you know, we're going to give our universities and we're going to give NIH the ability to patent things so that the money that the industry is making on them, on taxpayer-funded projects, some of that money can come back to NIH Some of it can go to the universities where there were brilliant scientists who could be working for private industry, but instead they're working in academic fields and they're doing pure research, and we want to reward them so they're not walking around in tweed jackets with leather elbow pads and can't afford anything. We're going to actually give them, you know, a reward for their labor. And the problem was, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, because I still don't understand how this happened, that HHS interpreted the Bayh-Dole Act not only to allow the academic scientists to collect money and the academic institutions like Harvard and MIT, which are making billions of dollars now on royalties, technologies that were created by their scientists, but also HHS interpreted to allow individual scientists within the agencies who use taxpayer money to and worked for some period on these projects to also file a patent on the projects and then collect royalties. And at that time it was unlimited royalties. And I think actually there was a scandal involving Tony Fauci with interleukin. He owned a patent for a drug called interleukin, and it came to Congress's attention because an internal HHS investigation found that a lot of the trial subjects in that study were getting very sick and they were dying and there was suicidal ideation, and that Fauci had not told them of that risk when he was recruiting them.
Right.
And during the process of that investigation, it became clear that Fauci owned a patent for interleukin. And people were saying, wow, you know, this guy isn't telling people the risks of this. He's going to make a lot of money on it. And at that time, he told Congress and he told the AP, oh, don't worry, I always plan to give that money to charity. But he never told how much. We have no idea to this day how much money he's made on that or how many patents he owns.
Right.
And he could own patents. He could own thousands. Well, I think there are, you know, over 1,000 patents that he's funded development of. We have no idea.
Close to 2,600 that they acknowledge. I think it's 2,655 that they acknowledge, and they have another approximately 1,000 that we've tracked where the grants they've given have given rise to a patent, which is where they would have, to your point, they would have march-in rights. So
and, let me
somewhere
just,
in the neighborhood of 3,500 patents.
Let me just finish painting this portrait of what Fauci does. So this is a federal agency that is supposed to tell us where's the autism coming from? This all happened under Tony Fauci's watch. When he came in 84, the chronic disease rate in our country was 12.8%. By 2006, it had gone up to 54%. Those are autoimmune diseases. Those are allergic diseases. That's right in his wheelhouse. That is his expertise. He's supposed to be an autoimmune expert. He does not spend a penny trying to figure out what environmental toxin and exposure is causing this epidemic of disease. Instead, he has transformed NIAID, his agency, into the primary incubator for the pharmaceutical industry for new products. So he creates the products, he sells it to them, he transfers it to them for very, very beneficial prices. And he gets it, he walks it through the FDA approval process, which means then Medicare and Medicaid have to pay for that drug. He helps negotiate those deals and get beneficial deals with the drug companies. And then the money comes back to him and his staff through royalties. And so instead of researching and trying to stop all these chronic disease from happening to our children, he's ignoring all of that and simply essentially printing money. And let me tell you how important this is. In between 2009 and 2016, there were hundreds of drugs approved by FDA, and every single one of them came out of Tony Fauci's shop. So that is the impact he has had on the pharmaceutical industry. He, during his tenure, the chronic disease rate has gone from 12% to 54%. we now use more drugs than any country in the world. We pay the highest prices for those drugs, and the drug industry is now controlling our government. And Tony Fauci, the reason he's lasted there for 50 years is he's like a mix between Bernie Madoff, which we can see in this Moderna racket,
yep,
J. Edgar Hoover. J. Edgar Hoover lasted for 50 years. He's the only other guy who's lasted for 50 years as an agency head, because he was using that agency to benefit big shots, to make sure the mafia didn't get prosecuted, to make sure that people, dissidents, people he didn't like would be spied on, like Martin Luther King and others, to bribe and blackmail, you know, big shots and files on everybody, and to make friends, yep, in big places. And the Tony Fauci has done, played the same game. And you've seen what he did, you know, how this is just, this is a Ponzi scheme, this Moderna vaccine.
There's no question.
Nobody in the world that would buy this vaccine if they knew what you and I know about it. It does not stop the disease. It has a huge injury rate. It does not stop transmissibility. And he has a $9 billion contract with the Pentagon for 500 million doses. How did he get that, by the way?
Well, so, but this is a thing. And this is where, you know, would that the generation that preceded you still be around where you could actually pick up the phone and call an AG and say, there's a crime. This is a crime, and I think we need to stop dancing around the edge of it and call it what it is. Anthony Fauci's behavior is racketeering. He controls the means of production. He allocates the market beneficiaries, to your point. He picks the winners and losers. That's an illegal thing to do. That's an antitrust thing to do. That's a criminal conspiracy. He is actually picking winners and losers, and then, just to add insult to injury, he's doing the price fixing, right? Think about what happens when you negotiate a price where you, in fact, are a vested interest in that negotiation. There's no public interest being served. This is a violation of his standard practice as a federal officer, because he's actually not acting in good faith. He is, in fact, price fixing. So you have the market allocation, a definition of antitrust. You have the interlocking directorate problem, which sounds sophisticated, but it isn't. He runs the shop on the organizations that declare the problem. He mysteriously always has the solution in hand. I mean, people need to know that we've got, you know, COVID 2.0 on the books right now. Suddenly, polio is back. Suddenly, the threat of acute transverse myelitis is back. Suddenly the threat of a whole bunch of other things that allegedly his 50 years at the helm of infectious disease managed, these are all coming back. And if you go back and you look at the patent record of his funded research, you realize he controls the pathogen. He then controls the means of detection and the means of therapy. And then he controls the price that it's going to get sold at. And he gets paid every step along the way. This is Chicago Mafia 1920s. And the worst thing is we now have a situation where justice isn't being served because, to your point, Bobby, the government controlled by pharmaceuticals has no incentive to actually address this problem. So we're going to see a rush to approve an untested and unproven. And the reason, by the way, it's untested and unproven is because every time they started down the pathway of a safety trial, it blew up. Moderna's technology was bad technology. That's why in 10 years they didn't produce a drug. It's not because the technology was speculative. It was because the technology literally harmed the things that they put it in. And so the reason why we don't have a drug from Moderna is for a good reason. They haven't produced anything that's safe. And now we're going to whitewash that because we've got the guy who's writing the check to support it, who's now on the other side.
You know, my son worked for a financial firm. And they called me up and they said, well, you know, what do you think of these vaccines? Because they were, you know, thinking of betting on them or shorting on them. And they wanted to know, I knew a lot about it. And they were asking me, which ones are the good ones? And I said, I don't know that. I know about the top four. And they all have really serious problems. But I watched during this whole time, I know all these problems. You know, the Moderna vaccine had in the clinical trial, the phase one trial, they had three in the high dose group, 21% of the people get injuries that required medical intervention or hospitalization. So you right. give that to a billion people and, you know, you're hospitalizing 21% of them. And they had, that's basically the entire population of the United States.
Right.
And you give, and the low dose group had 6%, which is a dose related response, which is one of the indicators for profound toxicity. Then when they gave the second shot, 100% of the people had some illness. So why would you give right. that? Why would you give that to children, for example, where 99% of children don't even know that they have it? Why would you give them something that has 100% injury rate? And, you know, I look at that and I say, this thing is dead on arrival. But at the same time that all this data were coming out, I was watching the market cap of this product go through the roof. How high did it get? The market cap.
Well, listen, they ran it up. Almost over the course of Anthony Fauci's promotion, the market cap doubled in the space of about 14 trading days.
It went up to like $35 billion or something, right?
Yeah.
Or even more. And I was looking at this and saying, how is this possible? How could people on Wall Street be so stupid? And then I realized what happened. Tony Fauci has a secret contract with the Pentagon. To buy, which I posted on my Instagram 12 days yep. ago, you can go look at it, to buy 500 million doses for $9 billion. And what that means is it doesn't matter if it works or not. It doesn't matter if it hospitalizes 20% of the people who take it.
No.
All he has to do is FDA approval, and the day he gets FDA approval, that $9 billion is his. And it's an easy thing for him to get FDA approval and then just never sell any vaccines. Well, the whole thing is such a sick, demented, and crooked scheme. But, you know, now that I know his life, I see that this is what he's been doing for 50 years at NIAID. Did the same thing with AZT. It did the same thing with remdesivir.
Yep.
He did, and yep. this is what he does.
Well, and you look at remdesivir, I mean, Gilead Sciences, when they actually
had— By the way,
had,
Gilead is one of Gates' huge investments, so that's—
Of course. Point. Yep, so and the whole cabal that's been part of the Moderna story has also been part of the Gilead story. This is actually another DARPA and NIAID funded racket. But if you look at that one, you know, the fact of the matter is there is not a chance that we would have an approval outside of the emergency use authorization. This whole medical countermeasures, the MCM, if people want to go and look at these things, the whole medical countermeasure approach to the declaration of a state of emergency and then the fast tracking of therapies to try to address those states of emergency all have conflicted financial interests. There has not been, and this violates, by the way, the 21 Code of Federal Regulations. If people want to go back, the Code of Federal Regulations that governs the FDA has a provision that says that there are, in fact, ways to expedite processes during a national emergency, an epidemic, or a pandemic. So there is a provision in the 21 Code of Federal Regulations that actually gives FDA the authorization to do this. But to do it, it has to be reviewed and approved by an independent institutional review board, an ethics committee, that has no financial interest in the outcome. That body has to be impaneled, and then that body has to meet, review the evidence, and approve it. Otherwise, you cannot do what they're doing. So they're even violating the provisions of the emergency use authorization. There has not been an independent, and by independent, this means the test of independence. Are you prepared to actually have no financial interest? And the fact of the matter is, this whole racket has been architected by people who actually have allocated the market, have interlocked their directorates, and ultimately price fixed. This is a criminal operation. It has been, it continues to be. And not surprisingly, where's Gilead? None other than one of the big donors to Governor Gavin Newsom. Why is Gavin so insistent on making sure that the state of California feels the pain of this virus? Well, it turns out that he's getting paid by the people who are getting paid for him keeping the virus going.
Let me ask you something, because we're being censored right now, so we're being frozen off of Instagram, but hopefully I can save this and play it for people later. There's one thing that you found that is of immense interest to people, which is the patent application from, I think it's 2016, that has language in it that says, we need this application right away, because in case there's an accidental or deliberate release of a coronavirus. What is the legitimate explanation for that line having gotten into the patent?
Yeah, so let's go ahead and read it just so that we have it in the record. This is actually in four patent applications. The patent applications started in 2016. The edit to this patent application was done in March of 2019. Everybody will recall March of 2019 in the calendar in 2019 precedes December. So it's important that we establish for the record that March is before November and December. And the quote was, because of a concern for the reemergence or the deliberate release of SARS coronavirus, vaccine development was initiated. And that is written in four Moderna patent applications, March 28th of 2019. So, and by the way, the past tense there is very important. Vaccine development was initiated. To write that sentence in March means that somebody actually had reason to believe that there was going to be a reemergence or deliberate release of SARS in March, such that vaccine development was initiated, past tense, March 2019.
Yeah. I mean, well, if you asked the Moderna people, what would they say? There's got to be some legitimate, pretense of a legitimate explanation for this.
No, and this is where Bobby, that a lawyer sits there and says, this is a good discovery. This is a discovery waiting to happen, right? This is the kind of thing you love to do when you know you've got a criminal on the ropes and you know the answer before you ask the question, right? The first law of any question in law school, know the answer before you ask the question. There is a memo somewhere that gave rise to that sentence. And given the fact that that memo has to exist, because somebody not only used that language in March of 2019, but that language was then replicated at least four times in international gatherings, including the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board with the World Health Organization, including Event 201, the language, a accidental deliberate release of SARS coronavirus, was specifically language used, which means this came from a written script. And we know the script has its first evidentiary basis in March of 2019. So somewhere before March of 2019, Anthony Fauci knows that there is a memo that he hopes never sees the light of day.
We don't know that Anthony Fauci was involved with that application, do we?
Well, we know that Anthony Fauci would have been somewhere involved in this, because Anthony Fauci was the one who violated the moratorium on gain of function in 2016. in partnership with the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, to take the Wuhan virus and a number of strains of coronavirus and mutate them and create, and I quote, synthetic chimeric variations of the Wuhan COV in 2016 during the moratorium. And he was the one that paid for it, which gave rise to the CDC and to all of the nonprofits that hold pathogens having on file the Wuhan virus before there was ever a wet lab or a wet market anywhere in Wuhan, China, in December of 2019.
Yeah, what David Martin is talking about here is that Tony Fauci, for many years, since I think 2002, has been experimenting with what is called gain of function studies, which are, are studies where wild viruses, viruses that exist in nature, flu viruses, MERS viruses, and in this case, coronavirus, are manipulated usually through by passing them through substrates made of different species. So they take coronavirus from the anus of a bat and they put it on pangolin tissue and it's teaching them to jump to pangolins, and then they use cocker spaniel tissue and they teach it to jump to dogs, and the ones that survive that and that flourish are the ones that are most transmissible, and then ultimately they transfer it to lung tissue from human fetuses, and that takes the final step and teaches it to jump to human beings. And once they teach it that, they can use it on animals, on mice or on rats that have been genetically engineered to include human DNA. And they can then study the transmissibility of the virus, and they can also study whether a vaccine works. It's used for vaccine development. It's also used as a bioweapon, and usually the labs that do vaccine development, this kind of vaccine development, are also in the same lab as are the bioweapons, and that's bioweapons development. And Tony Fauci was doing a lot of them, as you mentioned, at the University of North Carolina and elsewhere in our country. President Obama, I think 200 scientists wrote him a letter after there had been some laboratory escapes in 2014, and said, you got to stop Tony Fauci from doing these. This could turn into a worldwide pandemic, coronavirus pandemic. And Obama ordered him to stop, and we don't understand exactly what he did, but we know that he began outsourcing. He took the scientists that were working on this in North Carolina, and he sent them to China. And he funded them with hundreds of millions of dollars $3.7 million, excuse me, not hundreds of millions, but at least one $3.7 million payment, and apparently more.
Much more.
Yeah.
And he didn't.
They transferred the work to Wuhan, which is weird because it is a bio.
For those of you listening from our sister station, WBAI, we're going to say goodbye to you in about 5 or 10 seconds so you can get the last 5 minutes of normal programming. For all of you listening over PRN.FM, we're continuing right up to the top of the hour. There's about 7 minutes left to go, and the most interesting information is still to come. So for BAI, thank you for listening. We look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow. For everyone else, stay in line, because we're going right back to the interview.
Bioweapon and the Red Army, the Chinese Army, controls that Wuhan lab. So he was teaching the Chinese how to make a pandemic coronavirus, a bioweapon.
Yeah, but remember that in 2016, so right in the middle of the moratorium, because remember the moratorium went into effect in 2014-15, and then it was lifted in 2017. But right in the middle of that period, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, met with their ethics committee and decided that it was ethical to take Wuhan virus, a sample that came from a clinical outbreak that was apparently six guano miners, the bat dung miners in China, in Wuhan, six of them allegedly came down with a set of symptoms.
In Wuhan, I want to make that clear that in Wuhan, there are no bats.
No. The actual name of the isolation was the Wuhan virus one. The actual name of the thing that was the subject of a master's thesis that was data collected in 2013 and 14 and isolated in 2015, that virus was actually transferred to the U.S. So we got a Chinese virus brought to the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill during the gain of function moratorium, and the UNC Chapel Hill review committee, the ethics committee there, decided to overrule the gain of function moratorium and allow for the chimeric synthetic recombinant use of that virus in North Carolina in 2016. So right in the middle of the moratorium was not only not enforced, but UNC Chapel Hill's leadership said, we're going to willfully ignore the will of the National Institutes of Health. We're going to willfully ignore that statement that was made about the prohibition of gain of function research. We are going to override all of that, and we're going to approve research which takes a Chinese pathogen, combines it with U.S. technology that was derived entirely from the gain of function research, and we're going to make a synthetic chimeric combination of the Wuhan virus. 2016. I mean, when the law doesn't apply, when ethics don't apply, when morality doesn't apply, and then the funding sources for all of that information put information into the commercial labs that have commercial pathogens for sale. And Bobby, you and I have talked about this, where the federal government, through a series of kind of quasi-shell corporations that look a lot like nonprofits, but they're not, they're actually run for profit, where you dial up the pathogen you want, you can buy it. And so it's not surprising that when Moderna heard about the SARS-CoV-2, they knew who to call to get a jump on what is the actual strain of the pathogen that we should be focused on for the vaccine development. And that's why I'm saying that the likelihood that says that if that sentence in March of 2019, if the sentence that said SARS-CoV vaccine development was initiated, that means Moderna had to get either with the CDC or with NIAID, because they're the only two places you could buy the primer of the pathogen. They had to know it, which means somebody at one of those two organizations, likely both, knows the source of that sentence.
Well, David, thank you very, very much for joining us. I'm going to turn it off now because we've been, according to the comments, we're completely censored and off the air, but I'm going to try to recover this and put it on CHD's website. But as always, it's enlightening and inspiring talking to you, and thank you for your for your long efforts to get at the truth and to make our...
Well, that was some very interesting information. Now we're beginning to see why they weaponized this, why they commodified this, why they've had a worldwide campaign, propaganda campaign, including with the completely corrupt World Health Organization. You've been lied to. You've been played. Now we're talking about the weaponization, or at least the enhanced utilization of this. So everyone was lying, and they were breaking the law. Will anybody be prosecuted? Not at all. That's not how it works in the corrupt, toxic area of Washington, D.C. But at least you know the truth now. More to come, a lot more to come on upcoming programs. Have a nice day, everyone.